Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solotopia, solotopia, solotopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solotopia of a green world?
Well, we bit the apple and the garden was lost, so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. Too many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman, another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Happy to have you with us here in Solartopia. We're going to talk about the welcome demise that can't happen too fast, destruction and collapse of the nuclear power industry. Of three great guests with us today. Pat Morita, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, Harvey.
Pat, you and I are both in Columbus, Ohio today. Linda Gunter, are you with us from Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. Hello.
Good to see you or hear from you. And Tom Clements in the Deep South.
Yeah, hey, Tom, Harvey, here in Columbia, South Carolina.
Columbia, South Carolina. All right, we got Columbus, Columbia, and the District of Columbia. So there we go. We're covered in the Columbia region. What I want to do, we got a lot to cover today because we want to use three great experts. We're talking about the demise of the atomic power industry, which is actually hitting, as we say, critical mass. And Pat Morita, I'm going to start with and end with you. What's happening in the United States, and we're going to talk to Tom about the fall of these four reactors and the MOX plant in South Carolina, and Linda with a, from Beyond Nuclear with a general overview. But to me, the most devastatingly destructive and important thing that's happening as this collapse occurs is the state-by-state bailout of these devastatingly dangerous and destructive old atomic reactors. And, Pat, we've had some developments here in central Ohio with David Spezia. Do you want to give us a quick update on what's happening with the legislature here in Ohio and the attempt to keep this ridiculous relic continuing to operate?
Well, yes. Thank you, Harvey. And I want to also thank you very much for all the work you've done over so many years opposing nuclear power. So the most recent thing that's happened was yesterday, into the Ohio Senate, Senator Eklund, he lives up by the Perry Nuclear Power Plant. That's his territory. He introduced Senate Bill 128, which would give zero emission sources or zero emission nuclear resource credits to, in other words, a bailout to First Energy for their Davis-Besse Nuclear Power Plant and the Perry Nuclear Power Plant up there on Lake Erie. And this has had, of course, First Energy has really been a really bad actor in all of this. I put a little history together. Their profits of First Energy went up 93% from 2014 to 2015. But in February of 2016, First Energy made a first request, and they went to the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, and they claimed financial woes for their nuclear power plants and a couple of coal plants. So the next month, in March, the First Energy shareholders report actually showed a profit for these things that they had gone to the PUCO claiming that they were having financial woes. So that's a bit of a contradiction. But nonetheless, the next month in April, the PUCO granted First Energy's request. Then later that month, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, they rejected the PUCO approval. And so the First Energy went back to the legislature, which changed it. First Energy went back to the PUCO, the Public Utilities Commission, and they revised their rate request to eliminate being part of the It was just a straight bailout, so they didn't have to go through through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So they got $200 million a year. They already got $200 million a year for the next 3 to 5 years, but that's not enough. So now they've come back asking for more in the way of zero emission credits. But at the same time, they've been lobbying hard, opposing. Ohio had a renewable energy bill, which was really pretty good. It passed in 2008, but they were able to, First Energy worked hard. They were able to get in 2014 the Ohio legislature to freeze those standards. So those standards have not been in effect since that time. However, that expired last year, and they had a new bill where First Energy was trying to continue that freeze on the energy standards, but the governor overrode it. So now there's this bailout bill.
Unbelievable.
And there's Senate Bill 114, which would actually make that was just introduced very recently. That would make the renewable energy standards voluntary. So we've got two things. We've got 128, which would give zero emission credits, more bailouts to First Energy, and then we have the same thing. Well, having the same effect is putting a deep six on renewables.
It's shocking. I mean, it's embarrassing to live here in Ohio and to see this utter cynical insanity. On the one hand, Davis-Bessey is falling apart, literally, as Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear has recently repeatedly showed, and has no business operating, and it's like the other 99 reactors still online in the United States, which are all more or less, well, many of them are seeking, you know, handouts from the various state governments, which are the legislatures are owned and operated by the Koch brothers. And then they turn around and kill the renewable portfolio standard. I mean, Ohio had a very, very good law in 2008 after the end of the Strickland administration, and then comes John Kasich and the Koch Republicans. They kill all that. And now they're, you know, want to gouge the public for billions of dollars for the Perry, Davis-Bessey, and Beaver Valley nuclear reactors. Is that a fair assessment, Pat Morita?
Well, yeah, it's really a sort of a direct transfer from ratepayers, some of which aren't exactly wealthy, to First Energy stockholders, basically, is what it amounts to. And as far as zero emissions, I think everybody on this call knows that, first of all, nuclear power, the worst emissions is the radioactive waste. Plus, they're continually, these plants, the reactors are continually putting radioactivity daily into the air and the water, not to mention the high-level radioactive waste that they're producing, which will last essentially forever.
And the massive quantities of hot water. I mean, you know, every nuclear power plant emits huge quantities of hot waste water. And, you know, they never talk about this. If you look at the 99 reactors operating in the U.S., it's about 100 billion gallons of hot water a day. It's absolutely unconscionable. This idea of zero emissions is particularly insane.
And if they're talking about zero carbon emissions, that's not true either. It has a fairly high carbon emission when you add in mining, you know, the milling or refining, the enrichment takes a lot of energy. The building of the plants and then the fuel fabrication and the waste storage, if they added the energy that's going to be needed to isolate the waste essentially forever, that's a lot of energy, and some of that could be carbon energy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, Pat, if you'll hang with us, we're going to come back with you after we talk with Tom and then Linda. Tom, here in Columbia, South Carolina, the belly of the beast, I admire your willingness to, you know, Pat and I are here in Columbus, Ohio. It is in the Midwest, and there are compromises you make here, but you're down there right on the front lines of the Confederacy there, and you have been dealing all these decades with the four reactors that are under construction, the two in South Carolina and the two in Georgia, and of course now the principal construction company involved with these four reactors, Westinghouse, has gone bankrupt. And so these are the last four reactors under construction in the United States. Can you tell us, give us an overview of what's happening there with this Westinghouse bailout and the whole situation?
Well, Harvey, I guess you've just pronounced the nuclear renaissance dead, and that's pretty much what's happened. We all remember how they hyped up that all these reactors are going to be built all over the place, and the Watts Bar 2 and TVA old reactor was finished, so they've been left with the four new reactors under construction in South Carolina and Georgia, and they are a Westinghouse experimental design called the AP1000, and they started clearing the sites where there were existing reactors at Plant Vogtle in Georgia and VC Summer in South Carolina in 2007. And in South Carolina, the Public Service Commission began proceedings on the new reactors here by South Carolina Electric and Gas, and they were approved in 2009. So, and Georgia, pretty much the same thing. And the reactors were approved under laws called Construction Work in Progress that force us to pay in advance for the reactors. So since 2009, in South Carolina, we've already had nine rate hikes. Nine to pay for the financing of the reactors. So we're paying 18% of the bill of South Carolina Electric and Gas to pay for the financing costs. But we're not troubled with the laws like Pat was discussing in Ohio, because this was stitched up back in 2007 in South Carolina where we were forced to pay in advance. So the deal was already cut. But the problem now is, because they're experimental reactor designs, they've kept coming back to the Public Service Commission for cost overrun and schedule delays, which we warned from the start. And the cost overruns just got to be too much for Westinghouse, the reactor designer, to bear. And last week, they declared bankruptcy. So the electric utilities, Georgia Power and South Carolina Electric and Gas, are left holding the bag. So what's happening right now is they're scurrying to see who they're going to stiff with the cost of bankruptcy and the cost of more delays. There's no way they're going to start in the year 2020, which has been presented in South Carolina, and one of them is 2019 in Georgia. And at $1.5 billion a year for construction costs, they're going to be much more costs. So I don't know where this thing is going, but it's in free fall, and you can bet your bottom dollar that the utilities here, Georgia Power and South Carolina Electric and Gas, are going to try to stiff the ratepayers for all the costs they can. Westinghouse is going to bear some of them, but it's a disaster. I mean, it's been totally mismanaged, and you can attribute the nuclear industry itself to killing their nuclear renaissance, because nobody's going to be building these things given the debacle that's happening here, and it's playing out real time. And we'll find out more next week, but all sorts of secret meetings are going on amongst the parties, and no telling where it's going to go, but they've actually put on the table the abandonment of the project in Georgia and South Carolina, and the problem with that is we get stuck with the cost. So as somebody who's on one of the cooperative boards here, he calls this the long con. The con started in 2007, and it's still going on, and they're still trying to milk us, and we've got to push back in legal ways to try to get the utilities to bear a lot of the costs that they're trying to push off on us. So that's kind of an overview, but it's a mess, Harvey, and I don't know where it's going to end up, but everybody's in full-blown panic mode given the Westinghouse meltdown.
How much money are we talking about, Tom Cummins?
Well, right now, South Carolina Electric and Gas, which is a 55% partner, and a C&T Cooper, which is a state-owned municipal power or a power authority, is a 45% partner, and SC&G 55%. in filings with the Public Service Commission in South Carolina, the cost right now, well, as of last October, was about $14
billion.
Which
was $14 billion
over what they said in 2009 when the project was approved. And now Morgan Stanley, analyst, said about 2 weeks ago that the cost could be $19 billion. And I could well see that if there are years more of delay at $1.5 billion a year with both projects. So there's no cost that's been presented, and there's no schedule. And if you ask parties here, where's the schedule? Well, there is no schedule for construction and for finalization of and bringing the reactors online. I mean, it's just totally crazy. No cost, no schedule.
It's breathtaking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we warned about cost overruns and delays. But for it to have sunk this far, I mean, I didn't foresee that their reactor vendor was actually going to go bankrupt because of the projects. And this is impacting plans of Westinghouse to build reactors in India and the United Kingdom and other places. And they've just... You know, they've destroyed the possibility of selling this reactor anywhere else and for any other big new reactors being built in the United States. So, I mean, it's absolutely stunning. So it's all going to play out over the next months and years. And, you know, bottom line is the ratepayers are going to be stuck with a lot of these costs unless we effectively push back.
Well, you're a gambling man. Well, what would you say the odds are on the South Carolina and the Georgia utilities just flat out canceling these four reactors?
Well, I don't really know. I think they want to keep all this going because right now the rate of return of South Carolina Electric and Gas is 10.5%. So they're making money on cost overruns because they had the laws written by their lawyers and passed by a legislature, both legislature in Georgia and South Carolina, that are in the utilities' pockets. I think they're going to present a case where they can keep going, but it'll be based on information that is not true. So they may be able to keep them going for a while because I think in South Carolina they're out of money. I mean, they're just out of money. And nobody's going to be buying bonds from the public side of the project, which is 45%. So they're going to have to pull one out of the hat, but the public service commissions are willing to do anything to keep them going. But it may be only for a while, so I think the odds of them going down have gone up tremendously here in the past couple of weeks, but I just don't know exactly what's going to happen. But it's going to be a mess, any way you cut it. It's one huge nuclear mess.
Now, of course, the two reactors in Georgia have federal loan guarantees involved, thanks to Barack Obama. How does that play out?
Right. They have, I think they've drawn something like $2.7 billion on that Department of Energy loan guarantee. So that brings the federal government into the project in Georgia. And I don't know what their role is going to be, but we see things in the media that they want U.S. government protection for the companies so that they can continue the projects. And they tried to get, you know, the Westinghouse wouldn't go bankrupt and somebody would buy them, but that hasn't happened. South Carolina Electric and Gas does not have the loan guarantees, so the federal government isn't directly involved. But that just complicates the matter on the Georgia side. But it may make them more willing to abandon the project if the federal taxpayers are going to absorb some of the losses. But we don't have that in South Carolina, so it's back to the beleaguered ratepayer here.
Well, how's the public reacting to all this in these two states?
You know, Harvey, that's a hard part for me to swallow is there's not a lot of public reaction at this point. And part of the problem is, you know, the media is in sharp decline, and there has not been a lot of reporting in the media. And the newspaper here in Columbia, South Carolina, just laid off more staff last week. So we're not getting enough reporting in the media. The Charleston, South Carolina paper has been covering it more than anyone. But we already have, as I said, 18% of the bill in South Carolina because the utility is very small. In Georgia, I'm not quite sure how much they're paying for the new reactors, but it's on the order of 5 to 9%. I'm not exactly sure, but the ratepayers aren't up in arms. I mean, they should be. And if this keeps up, we're soon going to be paying, 25% of our bill for the new reactors if they're abandoned. And then 50% of the bill is just going to be for this project. And I think it's going to start having an impact where the public and commercial and industrial users are really going to be pushing back hard. But unfortunately, that's not developed right now, but it's certainly latent, and the possibility is bigger for, an uprising than it's ever been.
So it's an astonishing situation, and I think the Westinghouse situation has also impacted the Hinkley project in Great Britain. Hopefully, Areva, the French reactor maker, is also in bankruptcy, being backed up by the French government. So, and then, of course, Westinghouse has been building reactors in China, and we hope to God that falls through as well. And Tom, you've been on the front lines forever on this, almost alone, and this must be pretty amazing to watch in front of your eyes the collapse of these four, the last four reactor projects in the United States. I mean, this is a historic moment. I hope I can call you back in a couple of weeks or months and celebrate the end of all commercial atomic reactor construction in the United States. This would be a huge landmark, don't you think?
Well, it's certainly possible, Harvey. As you know, and as Linda and Pat know, the nuclear industry is full of hype, and they hyped up the nuclear renaissance and new reactors in a way that was just unprecedented, and now it's collapsed at their feet. And they really don't have anybody to blame but themselves. And the collapse has been monumental. And, yeah, you might be able to call me up in a few weeks and the whole thing is going to be abandoned. But as I said, if the projects are terminated, we still take the hit. I mean, there's an evil beauty in the way this was set up where the ratepayers bear the cost no matter what happens. And that's the hard part for me to swallow. And we did warn about this, or a version of this, all along, but now the reality is stunning, and I think there's a high likelihood they're not going to be able to pull off these projects.
Well, that's music to my ears. Linda Pence-Gunter at Beyond Nuclear, you're sitting in the overview seat. What do you think is happening now with the national and global nuclear power industries?
Well, it reminds me a lot of the Monty Python and the Holy Grail scene during the plague, where the old fellow's brought out and he says, "I'm not dead yet." And the guy carrying him says, "You will be in a minute." They just need one last whack on the head. I mean, that's, I actually never use the word renaissance because I don't think you can kill off something that never existed in the first place. It was always hype. There was no there. Everything that's coming down now was sort of in some ways predictable, though I agree with Tom, it's a little bit more on the upper end of the stunning scale than we expected. And there's clearly going to be, I think, a sort of domino effect. I mean, the Toshiba Westinghouse collapse is likely to impact my home country of the UK at Moorside, where they're trying to build three of these. It's given other corporations an excuse to run for the exits, which is fundamentally what they all want to do. I mean, we've seen that really with Entergy as well, trying to get the heck out of its upstate New York reactors, and then sadly, Governor Cuomo giving them the bailout after they sold the reactors to Exelon. In the UK, the partner that Toshiba Westinghouse had at Moorside for these three AP1000s was a French company called Engie, who was desperate to get out of the nuclear construction business, as is Toshiba. And there was a clause in their contract that allowed them to do that when Westinghouse went belly up. So now Toshiba is left as the sole member of this so-called consortium called NuGen. So there's a big question mark, I think, hanging over what will happen there as there is in the U.S. And they're not alone. I mean, we've seen Hitachi also get into trouble, another Japanese company. There was just a sort of incredible overestimation of what the nuclear energy picture would look like, not only in the U.S., but globally. And so they made these very bad investments, you know, Westinghouse purchasing Chicago Bridge and Iron, Hitachi investing in a uranium fuel production plant that was never needed because there was no boom in nuclear power. And yet, as you say, I mean, the media, especially the opportunity to sort of place these pro-nuclear propaganda pieces always arises when you see news like this with Westinghouse. And so we've been sort of tussling with some of these that there's always a little flurry of them as soon as bad news on nuclear hits the press, including here in the Washington Post. So they'll continue to try this kind of, you know, smoke and mirrors propaganda campaign. But it's, I think it's, you know, it's fundamentally over, but it's just going to take a while to happen. I mean, the French situation, well, the Hinkley situation is really tied to the French situation, which is another unfolding scandal, which we've been on top of quite a bit in the last few days, actually, which is the whole issue of the Creusot Forge in France, which was producing potentially defective components for reactors, too much carbon in the steel that they forged there, which could lead to cracking in essential safety components, including the reactor pressure vessel. And that's actually been installed in the French EPR in France, in Flamanville already. So now there's a big question mark hanging over, okay, do we just sort of say, okay, go ahead with this, even though we know it's dangerous, or do you try to get them to go in there and fix it, or do you just cancel the whole thing? And we'll probably know later in the year what the decision is about that. So if the Flamanville reactor goes down, Hinkley will almost certainly go down. And so, you know, the only reason I think that they are all, especially the Japanese and French companies, are desperate to sort of stay in the picture somehow. They don't want to build these things, but they certainly want to sell them to other people, is this kind of, you know, flag they fly, which is, especially for France, you know, this is our thing. We are the preeminent nuclear company, country, you know, sort of Freudian slip there, company or country. You know, same with Japan. They want to continue to market their reputation overseas. And just one last thing on Westinghouse. I mean, what I'm hearing from my colleagues at Beyond Nuclear is there's a, I don't know how possible this is, that, you know, there's pressure on the Trump administration to sort of take it on financially to avoid it falling into the hands of China. I mean, I can't imagine why anyone in their right mind would buy Westinghouse, but, you know, this is, so it's become a sort of national security thing, which is always the problem with nuclear energy. It's intrinsically tied to nuclear weapons. And so, you know, you've got that piece of the puzzle floating out there as well. So who knows? I mean, it's obviously on its knees, and clearly renewables are taking over despite some of the terrible things that are going on with the, you know, the renewable energy standards. But, you know, I think it's, I would agree with the prognosis that if you're a fan of nuclear, the prognosis for this patient is terminal.
Well, let's review here where we're at. This is why I pulled the three of you together. We have an administration in Washington that is clearly incapable of running a national government. I mean, that's the great shocker with Trump. The same, I mean, we've been insiders, the four of us, on this nuclear industry for a long time. And even though we know it well, the scope of the dysfunction and collapse is, as Tom says, stunning. I mean, this industry is just, it's the fall of the Roman Empire. It is a failed state, essentially, and it's running in tandem, parallel with the failed state of the Trump administration, if you can even call it an administration. It's not just that Donald Trump is a hideously nasty and cruel right winger. It's also that he's spectacularly incompetent and has been unable to marshal the expertise to put together a federal government, which is now essentially being run by him and his son-in-law, for God's sakes. And you have parallel now, you know, the great Westinghouse Corporation. And let's put this in perspective. When the first major electric power plant in human history was put together at Niagara Falls by the state of New York, they figured out that they could do hydro there. It was the first major hydroelectric facility. This is the birth of the electric utility industry. And they put out bids, and there were basically two bidders, Thomas Edison, who came in with direct current, and Nikola Tesla, who came in with alternating current. And Tesla was aligned with Westinghouse, and they got the bid. And so Westinghouse was really the very first major purveyor of central generated electricity. And now, 120 or so years later, 130 years later, they are in collapse over atomic power. And Tom, you being down there in the belly of the beast, I mean, it just must be amazing to see the complete collapse of this huge historic structure. I mean, that's what we're looking at, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. And I think one of talking about conservation efficiency and hydropower, I think this is going to open some doors for conservation and solar and efficiency here in South Carolina and the Southeast. Unfortunately, when the reactor projects were approved, they did not, on the state level of Georgia and South Carolina, do a review of what kind of energy future we wanted, and they basically put it in the hands of the nuclear utilities. But I think we're going to have a reanalysis of that. I just don't think they can keep the con going much longer, and the growth in electricity just hasn't been there. So I wondered if they got these reactors started, and they're over 1,000 megawatts per unit, where's the electricity going to go? It's not needed here in South Carolina or Georgia, and they're going to have to dump it somewhere. So I think this is going to cause a lot of rethinking about the centralized generation and the prospects for solar and other alternatives in the Southeast.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I have read in various places that Georgia is actually moving ahead with solar. Is that a myth?
They have got, and maybe Linda knows more about this than I, but they have got plans for, I think it's on the order of 250 megawatts or something. It's big. South Carolina is minuscule because the state law is basically tying the hands of people in the solar industry. But that's changing, and I think this situation with the new reactors is going to possibly cause the door to open to much more alternatives, and particularly solar here in Georgia and South Carolina. So that's one of the upsides of this massive disaster that the industry has brought on itself.
And I think going back, Harvey, to what you were saying about Trump's sort of ineptitude and this whole, you know, he sort of tends to, because he's got no ideas about anything, he tends to sort of play to the crowd. So he had his, you know, his moment with his coal miners making what's obviously going to be a completely hollow, false promise to the coal industry. Well, the coal industry might profit, but the miners are not going back down the mines. Whereas what he could have done is look at the reality of what's happening in this country, where renewable energy is creating jobs, you know, 12 times faster than the rest of the economy, both wind and solar individually. You know, last year, one in 50 of all new American jobs was in the solar industry. And you can train quickly. It's not like this is a big learning curve for some of those jobs. And so if he really cared about people who are sitting in West Virginia out of work, you know, that's where he'd be injecting the support if he wanted to give people long-term, well-paying jobs. I mean, there are some of them, they pay like $5,000 more than the median national wage. So, you know, they'd be boosted in many ways. But obviously, it's not about that. It's just sort of playing to crowds and trying to sort of please who he perceives as his supporters, who unfortunately, you know, I think the trouble with the whole QIP issue as well is that, and why people don't kind of rise up, is that they don't feel it hard enough and soon enough. All this takes a lot of time. You know, folks are going to feel the absence, if indeed it goes away, of the Affordable Care Act, but not immediately. You know, they're going to feel the rate hikes, but maybe gradually. So it doesn't sort of, it's not a sort of huge impact in me all at once, a clear and present danger. And so the reaction times are very drawn out. But clearly renewables, as you know, better than any of us, Harvey, is where the opportunity is for the U.S. to shine both domestically and overseas. And it's insane, obviously, not to go that route and to keep sort of banging the dead nuclear drum and the fossil fuel drum.
Well, yes, first of all, I just saw, just like within the last hour, an article that I linked at nukefree.org that I love this. The coal museum in Kentucky is going solar. There's a museum for coal in Kentucky, and they're putting solar panels on the roof. And Pat, you and I here, long suffering in Ohio, we had in Ohio a beautiful transition plan to go to renewables. And the Coke and nuclear people came in and killed it. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right. And First Energy was the beneficiary of that, and they were the biggest lobbyist to try and overturn. They led the fight to overturn Ohio's renewable energy bill, and they were unfortunately successful. But
now,
speaking of the solar panels on the coal plant, I saw something. It didn't seem like it was a joke, but it said there was a proposal on Trump's wall. They were going to put solar panels on Trump's wall between the U.S. and Mexico.
Oh, that's been around a lot, actually. I've seen that for the last couple of weeks, that instead of building a wall, they should just build a whole line of solar panels. There's also a beautiful article in the New York Times today about the treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, by which we stole California, New Mexico, Arizona. People should go to the New York Times and look at that. Let's do one quick thing, though. In the Trump budget, he put out $120 million, I think thereabouts, in the budget to start looking at Yucca Mountain again, which I find highly amusing. The current cost estimate I've seen for finishing Yucca Mountain is $90 billion. Is that about right, Linda? I think you must deal with numbers like that from time to time.
It's like the biggest black hole in the whole nuclear sector, sounds like, you know, that to keep sort of pouring money after something that's clearly not going to happen. Another symptom of the general insanity. I mean, I think the thing that, we obviously were watchdogging Yucca. It has sort of risen again from the dead. And, I mean, a lot of it, I guess, will depend on whether we can flip Congress in 2018 and get the Democrats back into the majority. Not that they're all anti-Yucca, but Nevada is still holding strong, so that's good. But the other threat, of course, is this sort of consolidated interim storage, where they are planning to move nuclear waste from nuclear power plants to temporary sites that are supposedly voluntary. And at the moment, those sites are in West Texas and New Mexico, actually two competing sites which are not very far apart from each other. And this raises all sorts of other implications, because, you know, obviously Yucca Mountain was flawed as a repository, but at least it was a repository. This is going to be sort of parking lot, kind of outdoor, above ground dump sites. So I think that's something that we're looking at very, very closely to build as much opposition to as possible.
Yes, and when you're looking for a place to put this waste and a volunteer, then a for-profit company volunteers to take the waste. And of course, interim storage, everyone knows, means either it stays at the interim place or it gets moved a second time, so it's moved twice for no reason. And I think one of the problems is that after 70 years, there's really not a good solution for what to do with the waste. So now, you know, they don't want it. The fuel pools at the reactors are dangerously overcrowded. The casks and canisters that they're being put in are very poorly engineered and could leak radiation within 17 years. We're up a creek without a paddle. So, well, let's just take it somewhere and pretend that we've got a solution. And it's really dangerous what they're doing, planning to move this waste so irresponsibly.
Yeah, and I got to point out, too, astonishing. You know, astonishment after all these years. I mean, the four of us between us probably have, you know, about a couple hundred years of experience with these issues, and I never cease to be amazed. Now, at San Onofre and at other closed nuclear sites, they want to shut down the pools. And so they're taking all this stuff out in some cases. In other cases, they're leaving in. But where they take the high-level waste out and put it in dry cast, then to save a couple dollars a month, they shut the pools, and so there's no backup system if there's a problem with any of the casks. It's unbelievable. And also, Tom, you in the Southeast now, you've also been dealing with the MOX facility. Tell us about what's going on with that.
Well, if people are tracking new nuclear construction in the United States, there's the four AP1000 reactors and then the Watts Bar 2 reactor in Tennessee Valley Authority that just went online after sitting idle for 20 years. The MOX plant here, MOX means mixed oxide fuel, and it's a proposal by the U.S. Department of Energy to take plutonium from nuclear weapons and make plutonium fuel out of it to run in conventional reactors. Well, this project started in 2007. Here we are, 10 years later. Original cost estimate was $1 billion, under a billion, for construction of the project. Now it's $17 billion. With a completion date in 2048. I mean, it's totally absurd. So, and that's all happening, all these reactors and the MOX plant at the Savannah Riverside here, it's all within like 75 miles of me. So we are definitely new nuclear ground zero. But we should look at for some common threads between these projects. And I think the first one is that the nuclear industry is not capable of building anything new. The MOX project and the four new reactors, they have not been able to do it. Now, these things may limp along, but they're basically failed projects already. There's not enough skilled people to do this. There's not enough production of nuclear-qualified materials. So what's another of the common threads? And that's a company called Chicago Bridge and Iron. Chicago Bridge and Iron was going to build these modular reactors or provide modules. And before them, Stone and Webster. And it was all, you build a module, you stick them together, and you just crank the reactor up. Well, this modular construction has not worked out. And in large part, it's because of Chicago Bridge and Iron. And the utilities here kicked Chicago Bridge and Iron off the projects, and Fluor took over in January 2016. But if you look at the Department of Energy project, a federal government project, Chicago Bridge and Iron is still the lead construction contractor at the MOX project at the Savannah Riverside in South Carolina. Now, why they've been left on there, I don't know, but the Department of Energy is one way to funnel money to contractors, and they've been doing it hand over fist with the MOX project. I mean, it's a failed project. They're trying to revive it and continue it, but people who are covering the nuclear industry are not really looking at the three projects together. And I think they're inseparable because they all hold the lesson that the nuclear industry just can't build things anymore, and it's not going to be able to, as Linda has outlined.
Well, and CBI, Chicago Bridge and Iron, has its its counterpart in France, as Linda mentioned, this company that has built faulty parts, and they basically have compromised the entire nuclear project at Flamanville in France, and I assume that goes to the Olkiluoto plant in Finland, and who knows what they're putting in to the four reactors in South Carolina and Georgia. I want to point out.
Well, let me add, Harvey, and maybe somebody else want to make a comment. But another common thread, particularly between France and the United States, the Department of Energy project here at Savannah Riverside, the MOX project, is Areva. And Areva's I forget what the percentage is, but it's like 90% owned by the French government.
Yep.
And Areva, anytime they show up, you better hold your pocketbook. This company has the best nose of any company internationally for sniffing out taxpayer money. And that's their goal here in South Carolina, is to suck down as much taxpayer money on this MOX debacle as they can. And it's the same thing in France, as Linda well knows. She's looked into Areva, so she might want to comment about them.
Yeah, they're bankrupt, so that's sort of where Areva is. But the Creusot Forge, which I talked about earlier, there are 17 U.S. reactors which have parts from the Creusot Forge. And so what we've been calling for, largely on deaf ears, of course, with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is completely in the bed of the industry, is to say, hold on a second. Not only have they fabricated potentially defective, essential safety-related parts for reactors, including 17 in the U.S., they've also falsified quality assurance documentation to cover up the fact that they manufactured faulty parts. So there's a lot to be alarmed about. And in fact, what we learned over, actually on April 1st, there's a very good broadcast in France about this, is that the the Areva and EDF knew in 2005 and 2006 that they had this problem at the Creusot Forge, and they gave the contract anyway to Creusot Forge to make the component, to make the reactor pressure vessel for the EPR in Flamanville. And so this was sort of, and the NRC knew in 2009 that there was this kind of problem going on, and yet they will not say, okay, we need to materially check these U.S. reactors. The only one that looks like it's going to undergo a proper inspection is Millstone in Connecticut. Dominion owns it, but it's not Dominion that decided to volunteer this. It's the State Department of Energy that said, oh, you know, we want you to, since you're actually down for refueling, now's the time to go in and have a look at your part. I think it's the pressurizer there, so steam generators, to see if there's a problem. But, you know, this idea that you can sort of gamble with people's lives, I mean, this problem is potentially catastrophic. I mean, it could lead to a meltdown at any one of these 17 reactors. And the idea that our regulator, who is supposed to be the firewall between, you know, runaway rampant industry and public safety, is just going to say everything's fine and dandy and we know there's no problem and we're not going to force them to shut down and have a look, because obviously then they would lose a lot of money, and it's all about protecting the bottom line.
Yes, and we have Pat Morita. We have the same situation with Davis Tessy in Ohio, where Kevin Camps at Beyond Nuclear has been talking about the crumbling shield building there. We don't hear anything about that in the Ohio media. Have you ever read an article in the Ohio media about the crumbling shield wall at building at the I got my reactors mixed up at Davis Bessie?
Well, certainly not for a long time. I think it was brought out when Congress member Kucinich asked for hearings up there some years ago, and his last years as being a congressperson, maybe that was why they decided to have him compete against Marcy Kaptur for the seat there. But and it could fall. It's crumbling. Each time it freezes and thaws, it cracks another inch or so, which could drop concrete onto the reactor pressure vessel itself, or it could fall outside as well onto critical equipment out there. So there's so many reasons why nuclear is inappropriate in a warming world too. It takes a long time to deploy. It's, you know, as the water warms, these reactors are having to close down because warm water won't cool them sufficiently. So, goodness, we much, much more like six. There's a economist, Benjamin Sovacool, with the Institute for Energy and Environment at the Vermont Law School. And he has a lot of statistics, but one of them is that there's six times as much carbon could be saved with efficiency or wind as could, you know, possibly be saved by nuclear power.
Yeah, I want to throw one other thing into this sea of, you know, incompetence is not a strong enough word. I think failed state is somewhere between incompetence and failed state to describe the nuclear power industry. And into this mix, we have to throw in the explosion at the Waste Isolation Pyro Project. This is a stunning occurrence. You know, the WIP facility was supposed to be the state-of-the-art nuclear repository or suppository, as we call it. And that no expense was spared. It was primarily for military waste, but it was going to show that the government could handle high-level radioactive waste. And then 2-3 years ago, a single barrel of nuclear waste blows up, because they put the wrong kitty litter in there, and the place has been shut for 3 years, and it costs at least $2 billion. And then they want to turn around and tell us that they can make Yucca successful. I mean, please, you know. Does anybody else have another one of these instances they want to throw into the mix here?
Well, nuclear requires, you know, a mistake proof. It's a technology that requires no mistakes. But human beings make mistakes, and there's a big problem there. And it's kind of interesting here in Ohio. The good news is that as far as this bailout bill, the new bill that would the legislature would actually give them higher rates for FirstEnergy, is that it's not very popular. So there's the businesses are against it, and actually some of the senators and a lot of the legislators are against it. But there's kind of an amusing thing because the bill as introduced talks about zero emission credits, and yet these Republicans are the ones who are climate deniers, and quite often they're saying, well, you know, carbon emissions, that don't mean anything. So it's kind of, there's an irony there.
I suppose.
Well, just one thing you mentioned about the waste isolation pilot plant where plutonium waste would go that had an accident in February 2014. The contractor there, and it is opened up to some limited degree now, but the contractor there made money off the accident that shut it down. Their budget went up from the Department of Energy. So these companies know that if they make mistakes, they can make money off of them. If there are cost overruns and delays, they make money off of them. So that's the thing that we need to get changed, where they cannot profit from all these mistakes and problems, but they thrive on this. And, I mean, we're seeing it play out here in South Carolina where they're still going to get return on cost overruns, and that's something that really needs to be confronted by the public interest community.
Well, TEPCO is making money off Fukushima, for God's sake.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's sick. Linda, you got another one to throw into the hopper here?
Yeah, I was just sort of listening to all this and thinking, especially with the whip story, it's a little bit like the psychology of Trump, who, despite empirical data, continues to insist that everything's great or it went well or we won, or, you know, when clearly that's not what's happening. And that seems to be, you know, what prevails in the sort of pro-nuclear propaganda world, is this continuous sort of, we'll just beat these three drums, you know, a bit like the three words that Trump knows. There are three sort of things, that message points that they've got, and they just keep saying them over and over, and so that maybe they'll become true. But the reality is so dramatically different.
It is, isn't it? It's amazing. We're getting near the end here. Tom Clements, can you identify where people can get a hold of you?
Yes, sure, Harvey. I am the director of an organization called Savannah Riverside Watch, but have been with other organizations when we originally intervened against the reactor project here. But one place to go is www.srswatch.org, and my contact information is on there. And I'm posting stuff about both the MOX project and the AP1000 financial meltdown that's taking place now.
And Linda Pence-Gunter?
Well, our website is beyondnuclear.org. We're also on Twitter with @beyondnuclear. And on Facebook as well. So that's really where you'd find most of what we're up to. We have a weekly bulletin, email bulletin that goes out, which you can sign up to receive on our website by clicking the join button.
Okay, and Pat Morita?
So I'm the chair of the Ohio Sierra Club's Nuclear Free Committee. And you can contact me at my name, Pat Morita, that's M-A-R-I-D-A, @outlook.com. Or you can go on Facebook and like No Nuclear Ohio Sierra Club. And I'm also on a core team of organizers with the Nuclear Free Campaign at the national level of the Sierra Club. And you can check out our Facebook Nuclear Free Campaign of the Sierra Club.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's now, you know, we have a nuclear industry that is in indescribable chaos. I mean, it's really parallel to the Trump administration. It's completely a failed state. The good news is that we do have a renewable energy industry that's exploding, and that's just absolutely jumping ahead with incredible technological innovation. We have a billion-dollar facility going in Buffalo to build solar panels, a $1 billion facility in Nevada that's building batteries. These are the things that, you know, I proposed recently, that this $7 billion bailout in New York State, if they'd only put that money into these gigafactories, you know, we could create these jobs. Linda, I know at Beyond Nuclear, you guys look a lot at renewables. Tell us what you think is happening in the renewable industry.
Well, I think both domestically and globally, we've seen that it's on an upward arc. I mean, the wind power globally is on an incredibly fast trajectory. Solar, we talked about earlier in the show, you know, is really where the new jobs are going to be. And so, I mean, I'm not an economist, but I get the sort of sense that renewables will prevail despite any attempts to crush them. Obviously, it'll be harder and it might take longer, but I think it's sort of inexorable now. I mean, that's what all the data that we're seeing seems to suggest. So that gives us cause for optimism. Doesn't mean to say we go home and relax and put our feet up. You know, we've got to keep pushing for renewables and against nuclear. But I think that the battlefield is, you know, is no longer open to nuclear energy. And there's some, as you just mentioned, some really exciting things happening. I think that Buffalo plant is just sort of staring everybody in the face. I mean, it's such an obvious opportunity for Cuomo. But I think that, you know, what I looked at was his campaign contributions and where the votes came from when he ran for governor, because he's going to run again to be reelected. And that the money's in Westchester County and the jobs are in Buffalo, and he has high support in both those areas. So I think it was an easy decision for him to make, to just sort of throw this jobs bone, which is kind of a fake jobs bone, at the Fitzpatrick, Nine Mile Point, Janae communities, but with a bailout. But he really kind of screwed them, actually.
Absolutely. I mean, $7 billion to buy 7 gigafactories and God knows how many jobs.
Yeah.
Tom, what's the prognosis in the Southeast for renewables? I mean, are you going to be able to survive and break through to solar and other green technologies?
Well, of course, we've been lagging down here, but I think Georgia and Florida and North Carolina are leading the way. But, of course, the problem is the legislatures, which are generally controlled by the Republicans, who bend towards lack of economy and supporting the utilities and whatever they want. But I agree with Linda. I think a lot of this is going to be difficult to hold back because prices of conservation and solar and wind power are coming down. We've made small progress here in South Carolina, but there's a bill that's going to promote solar that's before the legislature now. So I think the trend is irreversible, and we're going to be seeing more particularly solar in the Southeast in the years to come.
And Pat Morita, how about us here in Ohio? Is there any hope?
Well, I think that the inexorable is going to happen, you know, and in spite of all, I do worry a lot about what's going to happen with the waste, because that's very, very dangerous, and the government, everybody is just trying to wash their hands of it and not really take care of it. So but there's kind of an irony there, too, is that perhaps someday we will be using solar and wind power to manufacture casks to hold the radioactive waste that we generated in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Well, let's put it this way. If solar panels are going up on the coal museum in Kentucky, then I suppose anything is possible. It's truly an astonishing development. Well, you guys have been a great a team here. It is deeply gratifying to talk about the demise of this industry, but I am terrified about what's going to happen with the remaining reactors, not only here in the United States, but in places like China and South Korea, and Russia now building reactors in the United Arab Emirates. I mean, please. But we'll just have to keep at it, and hopefully Tom will have a celebratory phone call in the near future on the cancellation of those 4 insane reactors in Georgia and South Carolina. Pat Morita, Linda Pence-Gunter, and Tom Clements, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you to the crew in New York. We'll be back again next week with another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, and we'll see you in a green-powered Earth.
Was there an Eve, or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more.